All right. Welcome back to Return on Podcast today. And guys, I'm really excited to get to talk to a dear friend of mine, Josh Gilliam from Coletti Coffee. Josh, welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks, Tyler. I appreciate bringing me on.
So a little bit of history. So Josh and I have actually known each other really well for a few years. And Josh is a successful seven-figure Amazon seller, private label brand developer. And so Josh, I want to get a little bit of your story here, but like, let me just frame it this way. Josh is a guy who went to the West Point Army Academy. You played football there a little bit, right?
I play lightweight football.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, I'm heavier weight. And yet when I went to the University of Georgia and went to the dining hall the first day and saw their definition of a tight end or an offensive lineman, I decided I had no business being on the same field with them. So, so Josh, you went to West Point, you had a career, successful career as an Army guy, as an Army officer. I believe you retired here pretty recently as a colonel. Is that right?
Lieutenant colonel.
A lieutenant colonel. And then you kind of pivoted, like not, you didn't wait until the end. But as you got closer to the end of your career, you pivoted into this private label brand that's really grown and become a huge, meaningful part of your life. And so would you give me a little bit of that pivot? Like what, how do you go from being an upper middle management within one of the most bureaucratic systems in the universe to like being a freewheeling CEO of your own company?
Oh man, Tyler, that's a really long story. That might be a podcast in itself. So, I mean, to try to make it super short, we were getting ready. The Army had was sending me to grad school to learn Islam, to teach at the Commanding General Staff College. And we were going to use that experience to learn Arabic and then to actually be missionaries. I was an Army chaplain, actually. Okay. Be missionaries in some of the harder places. And just in that process, God said, I want you to stay. And that's the dramatic story I'll save for another day. And it's instead excel in the grace of giving. And just the trying to work that out was really turned into Coletti Coffee. We've been trying to excel in the grace of giving by doing business well since 2015. And then, just got out of the Army in 2021 to do this full time.
And so then like your perspective is so fascinating because you're a lifelong learner. You and I also knew each other because we share seats in a mastermind that we meet regularly in. But like, give us a little bit of a glimpse into your mindset, because you're the kind of guy who exits the Army and then goes and works for one of these large aggregators just to learn what's happening under the hood. I mean, like, I don't know. Can you pick at that journey a little bit more for yourself? I mean, I just really respect the way your mind works. Like what makes you tick, dude? This is crazy. Like you're always learning something.
Man, that's a hard question. you asked good questions, too good. Why don't you rephrase it for me into what you actually want me to?
Why don't we do
the editing?
Yeah, we can remove that. But like, just dialing in a little bit. Maybe this is a great way to ask the Amazon related question is, what did you learn while you were transitioning and working with other people's brands that has helped you become a more successful Amazon brand owner yourself over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I don't think I have a good answer to that. Yeah, sorry. My experience with the aggregator wasn't a great one, because they stuck me on what was it called that we used to do, the amp.io. So I really spent all that time learning amped and didn't really get to. Anyway, what I learned is, wow, I'm like a better Amazon operator than I thought. this is a clown show over here. I mean, there's people that like are good at attention to detail and whatnot, but I wasn't like admiring what they were doing in the Amazon space.
But what's interesting is that you're not the first person that's told me that exact thing. Hey, my experience, by the way, I've sat on a couple of advisory board roles within these aggregators. I'm still sitting on one of them now. And what I have found consistently is what you just said. And that's actually it's more profound than you think it is. And it's that just because you have a 9-figure or 10-figure budget doesn't mean you're going to be a successful operator of an Amazon business. And
no, I felt like I was in there going, like meeting with like the COO going, hey, because he'd get together with me like every other day. And I'd just kind of like say, hey, these are some things I'm seeing. You know, then those are kind of like trickle down as changes, but they were very simple stuff. Just like army principles, like unity of command. Like, hey, you have this person that's getting direction from like four different places and they're totally confused. And so we were just, yeah, anyway. So I really think I became friends with the COO, and we would meet, and he would always pick my brain on, hey, what are you seeing? Like, you know, with the other Amazon sellers, what's the dirt, you know, what's going on in the space. And so we would chat, but unfortunately I didn't really learn that much. Yeah. Other than I don't want to, well, I think I also learned that, the complexity of managing like, you know, 6,000 SKUs. That I think that like playing the volume game there is destined to, well, you either have to be like really good at managerial stuff or just accept super low margins and try to scale that. But it's, you're scaling complexity, right? And so I think I further like said, you know, my strategy for like having a brand, having like, you know, a handful of SKUs that I know by name and I can shepherd, is a good one if to live a sane life.
Well, it's interesting. You're touching on something that I feel like has been one of my key learnings just from the CFO seat over the last couple of years, observing and partnering with these aggregators is one of the core assumptions, Josh, was that we would gain a ton of economies of scale, scaling into this level of complexity that you're kind of alluding to there. And I didn't see that to be true on a couple of really important levels. One is, I still have to understand my customer and my brand. And so the fact that I could maybe hire a kid out of college or grad school and make him the brand manager of a brand I just acquired, and that normally going well, isn't always going to be true. And so that thesis number one, you know, we go raise our Wall Street money, and thesis number one was, we're going to be able to out advertise the Josh Gilliams of the world. These lowly seven figure operators that are running their own brands that have blood, sweat, and tears develop the products from scratch. And in your case, you're the use case. You do go camping and love coffee. Like, we're just going to slap a kid in the seat and he's going to do just as well as Josh did. And that thesis, of course, proved to be very much so false. And then the second thesis that I sort of prove absolutely false was that, you know what we're going to do, Josh? We're going to manage the supply chain better. Even though it has 6,000 SKUs, 6,000 unique ASINs, we're going to manage it better because we're just smarter. We just got more resources. We're going to be able to centralize it. And I mean, can you speak to that a little bit? Obviously, that proved to not be true either, right?
Yeah, it's supply chain is so simple.
Yeah,
but it's not. Right. Everybody thinks it's so simple, and so. Sorry to use an army analogy, but we use this economy of force idea where you allocate minimum essential effort to non-essential things. And like everybody kind of does that, or we're doing that in the aggregate. I was, when it came to inventory, that was an afterthought. And we were out of stock a lot, or it was the huge backlash of then being, you know, having way too much inventory, which I can speak to that on my own brand, right? And so it's not a unique problem to aggregators. But I think that inventory tends to be so boring. And so, you know, it doesn't take like a superior intellect, or we would think, in order to figure out how to manage that we end up going, oh, I'll get to that later. you know, or, you know, I'm going to put my really smart guy in marketing. One of the things we're actually learning, that we're learning as a brand, I was on with you, Tyler. Actually, Tyler is, I get his advice on CFO stuff every now and again, and that's some other people, kind of on a Coletti council or a board, advisory board. And I was saying, like, you know, I'm taking over inventory because the guy that we were doing wasn't working out. And somebody pointed out to me that, well, Josh, it's not working out for you to do it either. like, you're out of stock on your hero ASIN. And as we reflected on this, I think the lesson learned was inventories, because it doesn't take a superior intellect to do inventory, but it takes superior attention. And as CEO, we have a really hard time like allocating our attention to something as mundane as inventory. Right. And so it chronically fails. I don't know how many times, Tyler, I've said, I don't know, now I'm getting, talking about inventory. I'm not sure if this is the direction you want to go. I don't know how many times we've said, we are never, ever running out of inventory again. I mean, I've had 3 West Point graduates, like, you know, friends of mine that are smart people, right? You know, like 1500 SATs, right. One of them with a PhD, by the way, like trying to manage inventory, and we still run out of stock. And I think the thing is, it's just boring. People don't want to spend 40 hours a week thinking about it. Right. You know, they want to spend 2 hours a month thinking about it, but it just doesn't work that way. So that is one of the things we're learning. And the aggregator was no different. They were taking all their smart people and they were sicking them on, like, how do we get outside traffic? And really was late to the game of, oh, we have to really think about inventory. And I can tell some more stories about trying to get into EU and whatnot and all the inventory debacles there. But
it is interesting, Josh, because like the business that you and I are in here is actually pretty simple. Like, I mean, it is simple, and yet it is, like you said, so detailed. Like, there are 3 legs of the stool. There's a how do I source my product leg, which is what you're talking about there. There's a how do I sell my product leg, which both of those, by the way, are way more detail oriented than you and I as big picture visionaries want it to be. Like, and there isn't like a software tool to make it an easy button, even on the marketing side. Like, we can use all sorts of tools to try to automate campaigns, and yet still at the end of the day, somebody needs to know the brand enough to kind of be keeping an eye on it, or it tends to fail. And yet of the two, and by the way, the third leg is capital. So if you take your, if you take your aggregator, they say, we're going to be able to hire smarter people for the marketing leg and the sourcing leg, and we're just going to have unlimited capital and we're going to win. And what we found is that the level of detail orientation required to be. So by the way, if you're listening to this, take heart. You know, Josh is talking about West Point grads with PhDs and then I'm just affirming that these aggregator outfits are worse. They're not just as bad. They don't feel as bad about this as you do. They're way worse than you are as an individual operator at managing your brand. And unfortunately, there are no shortcuts. Like, the solution, the antidote is just to be very detail oriented. Speak a little bit more about that in terms of how, do you mind, like, share a little bit about how your inventory journey over the last couple of years has been, just as a brand owner for Coletti, for your coffee brand?
I think our journey is similar to most people, just reacting to the environment of what happened. You know, you get a ship stuck in the canal, and you know, the next thing you know, containers are $22,000 to send in, and everything skyrockets, and people, labor outages in the ports. And so we run out of stock, and then we overorder, and then we run out of cash. And so that was kind of our journey. I think it's similar to a lot of people. And so, you know, we recently said, hey, we need to get to China, man. I've never been to China, even though I've been selling since 2015, and our whole supply chain's there, to try to negotiate some better terms with suppliers, just shake some hands and kiss some babies, honestly. Yeah. But, you know, since I was in the Army and, you know, had top secret clearance, you know, the Chinese didn't want me to come and the US didn't want me to go. And so I just stayed away, and then COVID happened. And so this last spring was the first chance I got to head over there. The big problems I was trying to solve were, well, one, can I negotiate better terms with my suppliers, mm-hmm. so I can take money out of inventory? I was carrying, like a lot of people, because of kind of what happened, and we don't want to run out of inventory. I was carrying like a year's worth of inventory, and that's, you know, about $500,000 worth of stuff that's just sitting on the shelves that I was then having to borrow money in order to grow new ASINs. And that just wasn't a good deal. So anyway, went to China to try to sit down with suppliers and say, like, hey, what do I need to give you in return for 60 day terms? Mm-hmm. Because if I can get 60 days, then I can start to take a lot of, well, at least what is 60, what's, you know, 6 divided by, you know, 500,000, you know, what is that? It's like $60,000 worth of inventory, at least, right there. So that was the main things I was trying to do. in China, to your question of what have I learned, of, you know, in my inventory journey, is try to take inventory out of the system. And then I can go on another lessons, but I stop there.
That may be, let's take the discussion that direction. So your inventory, like everybody, anyone who's listening to this, and honestly, I've said this before, but for within the seller accountant universe, which is still pretty small, we saw our clients have an average of 92 days of extra inventory on their balance sheet. So you're talking about in your business, 60 days might be 60K. You know, that ballooning of capital stuck in the supply chain was a ubiquitous problem. And it was exactly what you described. It was a reaction to what we thought was strong demand because of the pandemic, slowdowns in the supply chain, cheap cash. It was easy to come by. We bought inventory and we were like, oh gosh, now we have way too much. And so your problem is one that everyone is feeling. And what I love is that you took, which some people might think this is an extreme proactive step of actually, again, you know, kissing babies, drinking sake, going and shaking hands, being there like personally in China. Can you just unpack for us a little bit more about what you learned, what that experience was like, and what some of your big takeaways were from your China trip?
So if you haven't been to China, you got to go. You know, I'd kick myself that I hadn't figured out a way to go before. So a couple stories. I remember, you know, a supplier that I had done business with for like 5 years, you know, kind of walking into his factory for the first time. Well, one, it was good to just, okay, he does own a factory. You know, sometimes you just don't know, even though I'd been doing business with him for a long time. But for him to point out one of the things, like, hey, just to remind you, you know, that's, you know, those pallets over there, those are your glass tops. And I was like, my glass tops? What do you mean glass tops? Well, you know, the previous guy that did our ordering just ordered 100,000 glass tops, blue cell percolators, you know, just kind of forgot about it. And so he wasn't reminding me about it either. I don't know what the deal was there, but you know, until I got on the ground and started asking questions. And so anyway, that I recovered 20,000 just right there walking into the factory.
So literally you found $20,000 of your money sitting in the corner of your factory's warehouse.
I got on my inventory adjustment the next month. I got to add that, which was a unique experience. You know, usually I'm taking away on inventory adjustments.
Yeah.
Another time I did business with a guy that I met at the Chicago Houseware Show. And we did a French press, and we had a falling out. I don't need to tell that story, but, he refused to give me the mold back. This was like 3 years back, and I'd sunk, you know, probably 20 grand into the mold. No, I was going through, you know, another supplier that I use, kind of his showroom. They all kind of have, these are the things we produce or the things we can produce or get a hold of. And, I noticed my French press, and, I was like, whoa, timeout. Where'd you get this? You know, because we only did one production run, and he had like my color box, everything. He's like, oh, my brother, or my wife's brother, like, owns this factory. And it turns out like I was working with the trading company that I met at the Chicago Houseware Show. And so he calls him right there as we're sitting at his table. He says, oh yeah, he still got like 300 of them from the production run. You want them, but better yet, you know, he's happy to, he still has the mold, and he's happy to do business with you or to give it back. He had never knew you wanted it back. Anyway, wow. it was stuff like, so Tyler, we had already paid like a month before another company $13,000 to produce a new set of molds. Well, luckily they hadn't spent it yet. And so I was able to say, hey, time out. Don't make those molds. Please return that mold fee. So we recovered, it's, you know, it sounds like, you know, circus, our sourcing efforts. I know.
But the long story short here, because first of all, it sounds like this trip to China was a major ROI event for Coletti Coffee.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just two other just anecdotes. Uh-huh. I had been talking to a company about doing powder coating, and it just wasn't working, you know, just the lost in translation and the samples that I was getting. I'm like, I just don't think this is powder coating. And so we went to the factory, and sure enough, they're painting there. But something like that was just lost. And I had to show up to actually go into the factory to say, this is not a powder coating factory. You know, another thing that I thought was you just can't do over email is we were negotiating supplier agreements with a number of sellers. When I say that, it's really what in order to get 60-day terms, what do you need in return? And you know, I had one negotiation that lasted, you know, 3 days, and I sat in his office and drank, you know, cups of tea, you know, for over 4 hours. But we finally came to an agreement that was head and shoulders better than I would have achieved trying to do it over email or over Zoom. It took actually being there, just kind of like giving him the final offer and just kind of, you know, okay. You know, until finally he gave in. You just can't do that over email. That was tremendous ROI in terms of the terms that we were able to achieve, and in terms of the margins we were able to get in lowering unit cost. I kind of thought there was going to be more non-essential middlemen in the supply chain, which there wasn't. We were actually working with factories, but we're still doing it pretty inefficiently. The other thing we did, Tyler, is we set up and this had been in the process, but a trading company, because doing business in US dollars, there's friction there. There's also just increased risk. So one of the things that the suppliers wanted to see is they wanted to see us having a Chinese legal entity, because the risk for them is if they give us, you know, 90 days terms or 60 day terms, you know, our business in that time goes bankrupt, or I don't think they were worried about us cheating them, because we'd done business for a long time. But you know, they're worried for whatever would happen during that time, they went and get their money. But if we're a Chinese legal entity doing business with them, they can just take us to Chinese court. And so that gave suppliers a certain level of confidence that they can extend terms. And there's recourse if things go wrong. Also with us, I don't know if, I'm sure that supplier sellers that are listening out there have received a container that was faulty. I don't know how happened to us. I had to get carpal tunnel surgery because we had 10,000 percolators that all had the bottoms convex instead of concave. I get those mixed up, you know, one of the, and we spent like, you know, a week just hammering them back in to sell them at Amazon. And we switch suppliers. But if the deal is between a Chinese legal entity and a Chinese factory, then you could just take them to court. If it's a $100,000 kind of deal. And so not only does it protect the sellers, but it protects you. And so setting up. So
like getting a little bit practical there, like my uneducated, I'm assuming that the other brand owners out there would feel a little anxious that setting up a trading company would be a pretty like big pain and would be a lot of expense. Was it a smaller lift than you anticipated, or was it just worth the level of headache needed to start that trading company?
I partnered with a procurement guy. Super smart dude. Had to do a lot of interviews to find the right guy to partner with there. He's not truly a partner. He's more of an employee. But yeah, you have to have somebody on the other side that you trust. Also a huge headache on this side, worth it, but a headache. You know, you have to go to, you know, the Secretary of State and get an apostille. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but essentially it's a notarization of the Secretary of State's signature. So that can go over to China. Well, first it needs to go to the Chinese consulate, get verified there, and then on to China. So it's a process. And then if you're reading in the news, there's more scrutiny on, you know, US-based Chinese companies, or what they're called. They're called wholly foreign owned entities. Mm-hmm. But this is, I think, with business, if it's too hard for a lot of people to do, then there's probably opportunity there. Yeah. The other thing you get if you set up a Chinese entity is you get to claim the 12% VAT. And so, basically, if the purchase price at the factory, if you're doing it as a Chinese entity, you can then have the person that's working for you in China just claim the VAT tax, which is 12% of that transaction. And you get that a couple months later, but it essentially, you know, pays his salary.
I think you mentioned a couple of really important things there. Like just to summarize that discussion, and then you may have some final nuggets here. Yeah. One is, guys, if you're a seven-figure seller and you're not investing a few thousand dollars a year to go to China and do the things that are impossible to do via email, like build trust, really get face-to-face, make sure you know your partners. And then I heard a couple of other practical nuggets from you there, Josh. One of them is, like, if you're there in person, the ability to develop real trust and relationships with somebody who might be your boots on the ground, so to speak, in China, right? I mean, I just think that's,
yeah.
I mean, we talk about this on report, even on a podcast, Josh, we talk about this a lot, where it's like, please, for the love of everything, like, spend a few hours a month nurturing your supply chain.
No,
yeah,
it's really true. The guy that, you know, I spent a long time to identify and interview actually has a PhD in mechanical engineering from University of Minnesota. Wow. A great guy. But we spent, 12 days together, and it was, we were like teary eyed, kind of hugging at the airport. I mean, really, he's a dear friend, and I look forward to him coming and visiting out here. But yeah, that kind of relationship is hard to develop over Zoom. But another point I would make, there's a lot of factories, Tyler, that just won't do business in US dollar and won't do business in English. But they're the actual factory that makes the thing. And so in order to do business with them, you either have to use a trading company or you have to get on a plane and drive to the factory, with an interpreter and do business that way. And so there was one company that we had, they wouldn't do business with us. We had to use their trading company. The trading company is a huge headache. We did one product. It went gangbusters. We're like, okay, I'm getting on a plane just to like figure this product out. Right. Because we were trying to do some, some design changes to it. But if you're trying to do a design change and you have to work through a trading company, it's like, okay, you email the trading company, the trading company then emails the factory, and it's hard to play telephone in English, but try to play telephone over email, multiple languages, just impossible. So had to actually drive to the factory with somebody that spoke English and Chinese and knew a little bit about like mechanical engineering, with samples, to do some grunting and pointing and until we got that straightened out and to convince them to do business with us. If you're not willing to do that, then you just kind of have to continue to work with the trading companies. And that isn't a bad thing. I mean, they add a value added service of connecting you to these factories that you can't connect to.
Right.
But if you'd like to cut those guys out, you kind of have to get on a plane.
So we're still on supply chains. One more question here, because I'm just really fascinated with this journey. So you go to China, you make all this headway, unbelievable ROI, like, wish, obviously security clearances are one thing, but I just wish you'd been able to do it a couple of years in earlier. And I think the other thing that I feel like you stumbled onto that I just want to hear you talk about a little bit is this idea of ship drip, this idea of trying to find ways to lower MOQs.
Thank you.
Yeah, speak to that a little bit, Josh. Like, because I think the audience is going to be pretty much going on.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things we realized is instead of paying, the $30 a pallet in, outside of the port of LA, and $60 in labor, I was getting a check from my 3PL, over $2,000 a month. And so one of the other objectives was like, hey, we can figure this out in China. My factories are allowing me to store for free. So I know that there's plenty of space, right? And so we wanted to identify either a central factory that we can kind of do all our kitting at, or just a warehouse, in a warehouse partners and relationships in order to move our 3PL from the US, from LA to China. And this makes sense for a number of reasons. One, you reduce the cost of, you know, real estate in California. Number two is you cut about 2 weeks at least out of inventory that you need to carry on your books. Because in order to ship it, you know, to the port of LA, then to your 3PL and process there, and then from your 3PL out to Amazon, you have to add 2 weeks additional, you know, for all that coordination. And you have to add actually another employee for that in coordination, what we found. And so the thesis was, hey, we can figure this out in China. It's practically free to store things there. We can, and then we can recover that time, that the, you know, of things traveling to our 3PL in California. And so, yeah, we set all that up, you know, for ourselves in order to be able to drip instead of dripping in from California. We want to drip in from China. It's the same thing AGL's doing, you know, Amazon Global Logistics. You know, one of the questions you asked me, I'll come back to that story, Tyler. But one of the questions you asked me is before we press play is, hey, just what are you seeing? What are you learning? Where do you see this Amazon journey going? Mm-hmm. And you know, we see over and over again of Amazon making things cheap to get people to pile into it, and then, you know, slowly increasing the fees in order to get the margin for, you know, the investors and whatnot. And you know, this Amazon journey has been fun, but we're seeing our margins erode, and I can talk about that at the end if you want to, but where my point is although AGL's cheap now, allowing you to kind of drip in from China, incredibly frustrating to use. It was taking like 60 days for us. I think it's gotten a little better. I'm trying it out again just to see how the experience is. But I'm certain that if I commit to AGL 100%, that those fees are just going to go up once they, you know, reach their adoption goal. And so we're committed to starting, you know, really our warehousing and ship drip system from China, outside of the Amazon ecosystem. I don't want to teach them our suppliers either. And yeah, that's what we're doing right now. I've negotiated with our factories, umbrella agreements. So we're basically making, hey, we're going to essentially guarantee you this much volume over the course of 6 months, but I'm going to send you an order once a month. Mm. And so, what this does is it allows them to purchase those things that they need to purchase in bulk, but then have a production schedule that, you know, according to my forecast, where I give them the order each month, they send, you know, whatever, the 1,000 units from the 5 different factories, we consolidate it into one container in our warehouse, and then drip it in each month to straight into FBA. We're also can do it into Canada and into AU. So what we were doing before, Tyler, is we were doing this in LA, and then I was paying customs, you know, twice, once into LA and then again over the border into Canada. And that was just dumb. So from the Amazon warehouse in China, excuse me, you know, the ship drip warehouse in China, we can drip into AU, Australia, Canada. We haven't done EU yet, but we're not doing EU with my products. And then of course into .com.
Couple of nuggets there I just want to make sure people catch is I do think that this is something that's been a recurring theme for our clients here at Seller Accountant, is if you can give your factory a little bit more assurance, like you mentioned, hey, we're going to commit to buying whatever 20,000 units over the course of the year, you will find them to be more a little bit easier to negotiate with, to say, hey, it allows them to pace out their production schedule. You're going to make a monthly order. And Josh, to your point, you might even be able to pay for it, you know, on the back end. And so you've solved a problem. Just remember that you can solve a problem for your factory, because they want to keep their workers busy all year long. And so helping them pace it out may give you some cash benefits.
Yeah. You know, one of the most helpful things for me is to sit down with my suppliers and just ask them, hey, what is your choke point? You know, what do you need to order in bulk? And then kind of identifying that, then we know how to negotiate. And you know what to give them in exchange for what we want, which was, monthly orders and net 60 terms. And so those factories, you know, each month sending into our warehouse, you know, right there in Shenzhen, and then sending it in. You know, part of the, if I can plug Tyler's group real quick, one of the best decisions I made over the last 2 years was getting into a very small network of sellers that, that were on the same journey as me and I can ask questions to. And Tyler, you just do a great job of facilitating that, man. I remember when I first signed up, I was like, man, this is too expensive. I can't believe I'm doing this, but every penny of it's worth it. So thanks for doing that. But anyway, those guys are now just dear friends. And, you know, I can help them out in, solving this for them, with the ship drip thing. I think we have some capacity, initially, you know, to take on like 10 sellers as we kind of verify our concept and whatnot. But,
clarifying two things that you mentioned there, Josh. One is Josh and I are in a group called the Sellers Roundtable. If you're a 7 or 8 figure e-commerce seller and want like a board of advisors, 12 to 15, reach out to me. I can help you with that. And then Josh, I think just want to make sure people get this. We're going to make sure we post Josh's email for this new ship drip. It's josh@shipdrip.io, but we'll make sure we post in the notes. And I know Josh, you don't have a ton of seats. That sounds like it's 10, but if you're a seller that's looking to explore, I know Amazon is going to jack up AGL. I know they're going to jack it up, and I want to make sure I've got a little bit more sophistication in my supply chain. Let me partner with a guy like Josh and these other sellers that are in the mastermind and find some economies of scale. Like, I'm assuming, Josh, they might be able to join kind of a beta waiting list if they reach out to you. Is that right?
Yeah. We're not like, you know, going public yet, but yeah, if you're interested, just josh@shipdrip.io, email me. Right now it's just me and, you know, three other guys from this group trying to figure it out. You know, one thing that we're doing right now is, if you guys know that Amazon is forcing us to ship. You know, it used to be you could ship directly, you know, into, you know, LAS1 or whatever in California, but now, yeah, you know, they're making me send to like Wisconsin and Florida and Pennsylvania and three different shipments. And what they're doing is they're forcing us to use AGL. And so we're like, all right, we'll play your game. And so we can still kit it together and have AGL pick it up at the warehouse. But it's just having the infrastructure there. So when that changes, you know, we can go back to using our forwarder. We're just going to have to see how that evolves. But right now the thesis of, you know, just sending it all into one place so that I can consolidate it. Because one thing I'm finding is if you take one item and you want to send it in, it's super expensive for straight from the factory. Because Amazon makes you send it to these super remote warehouses that's hard to get appointments for. So even being able to take multiple ASINs and put them into one shipment is there's benefits there. Tyler, I know I've talked way too much, so I'll shut up now.
Well, I really think what's happening here, Josh, is that there are just so many things you and I, because I love talking. I was on your podcast last year. I love talking to you about this stuff because you're such a knowledgeable guy and you have so much real experience. I mean, we probably just need to do this again at some point. But I think just to land the ship on this particular episode, guys, invest in your supply chain. That's going to mean buying a ticket, getting your passport, polish it up, kissing babies, drinking sake, shaking hands, doing the actual work to be profitable in your business. If you're interested in learning more about Ship Drip, email Josh. We'll have his email address in the show notes. Josh, here's how we close every episode of ROP is, and when I mentioned this to you before we hit record here, you laughed at me because I guess I asked this question a lot in our mastermind, but what is the habit, hack, practice, routine that has given you an unusual return on investment in your life?
Yeah. So each day, you know, I try to get up, work out, you know, get into the office where I'm fresh. The first thing I do would be to, open up this journal right here. And I write down like kind of a brainstorm, like 3 to 7 things that like, if I could do like one thing today, what would it be, to move the business forward? And I do that brainstorm, having kind of glanced at my calendar real quick and glanced at my quarterly goals real quick. And then I just actually, this is maybe too much information, but I like kneel down right there and I pray and I say, God, You've said in your word that if anyone lacks wisdom, you know, to ask you, as you give generously to all without finding fault. And I need some wisdom on this. Of course, you know, use different language than that, but really just seek God's guidance in helping me, because I'm not smart enough to choose the right priority, to order 1, 2, and 3 for the day, and then to knock those out. So I think that's the thing that's helped me more than anything else.
Well, and sorry, I interrupt you there, but like the thing that's even more powerful about that is that you kind of define, like, as an entrepreneur, it can be hard to know what it looks like to win today. And so your idea of looking at my goals, you know, obviously asking the Lord for guidance, and then saying, hey, what are the fewest number of battles that if I get to check these boxes off, I get the like dopamine hit of having been successful. And I can say that I've like, you know, done my part to win today. I think stringing together, I have a really good friend that always talks about week one, day one. That's every day's mantra for him is, all right, it's week one, day one. I've got, what can I do to win today? What can I do to win today? And I actually, knowing you, Josh, I could imagine that being a really powerful tool in your life.
It's also a reminder, Tyler, that, like, you know, my main partner, and this is, I don't want to, don't ding me on theology, but it, you know, it's God. You know, he's the one that's given me this commission to do this. And so it's also a reminder to myself that I can't do it by myself. I'm not smart enough. I'm not talented enough. I am not organized enough, wise enough. We don't have the insight, to make the right decisions. And, but also just the confidence that this is a journey he's put me on, and he's not going to hang me out to dry, that he fulfills his promises. Those reminders, are helpful in giving me the confidence and the motivation to go after it another day. So, yeah.
Well said, man. Well said. Well, with that, guys, we're going to close this particular episode of Return on Podcast. Again, we'll make sure Josh's contact is available if you want to check him out. By the way, if you are a camper and you like making coffee, definitely check out Coletti. You know, hey, don't click on his ad. You know better. Go directly to the listing and buy that product. Leave him a 5-star review. But seriously, thanks for joining us today, Josh. We really are grateful for your time and for your thought leadership in the space, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks, Tyler. Good to see you.
Peace. Thanks. All right. And this has been Return on Podcast. I'm Tyler Jeffcoat. See you guys next week. Take care.